Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome. My name is Michael Lewis Ingram, and I am the host of Soul Tree Radio and The Raw. We have taken time to do a series of rebroadcasts in which we will hope to glean enough information to solve a murder. Ray Greco was a prosecutor in Pennsylvania who is on the trail, we feel, of something significant regarding Jerry Sandusky, the pervert from Penn State, who had sex with children and is doing, hopefully, all kinds of time in jail. However, we realize that the dead don't rest without redress because Greco's dead, or at least found missing and has not been declared dead yet. We have done this because we've done shows on child abuse, and we hope to cold case enough information to put something together. Now, sit back and listen as we try to put some pieces together and enjoy.
Thank you.
Saturday afternoon, show number 246. Happy birthday, Princess Narda. Yay! But welcome to another. It's getting hot in here, and you don't need to take off your clothes because I didn't have to put on too many to begin with version of Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, thinking of DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it's good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network, Roland Rogers, CEO of Loving Memory, our friends at Blog Talk, our friends and colleagues at 1450 WCLM AM, the Soul of Richmond, Virginia, Calvary, Reggie, and crew, doing their thing from noon to 1 Saturdays on the East Coast. Our colleague from Western New York at WUFO 1080 AM, the Mix, the Mighty Obar, Pat Freeman himself, doing serious work for the citizens of Western New York in trying to talk sense into the powers that be into a win-win project in the guise of the Stadium Entertainment Complex project in downtown Buffalo at the Outer Harbor, as well as our buddy Anthony Johnson, who does a great job with his show Thursday night and every Thursday night from 9 to 11 p.m. on Blog Talk. Our colleagues at Guardian Caps, Leader and Hanson and Mike Feely. Travis Singleton doing his thing with Kicks for Grades. If your kid is good in school, they might do even better on their feet if they live in the Boston, New England area. Get those A's out. You might have a new pair of kicks, boy or girl. Florida Travis for his efforts as he's probably going over the Patriots draft chart as we speak. As well as our colleague from the East Bay, the band man himself, Gary Norris Gray. What's up, Jay?
I better not go anywhere near Boston, Connecticut.
What the mouse do now?
I'm telling you, I'm going to rock that world like I'm going to go to Connecticut.
Oh, shit. What happened?
The way that they pulled Bridgewater and the way they messed with Clowney, they think Clowney wanted to go, went not a good pick number one. Guess what?
I'm glad.
Well, anyway.
Yep. I'm glad you brought that up, but the bottom line and all of that, we know from the beginning of this thing, everyone, it wasn't just you and me, everyone agreed that Teddy Bridgewater was the most pro-prepared quarterback in the draft. All his numbers indicated he was good to go. And they went on a month-long campaign, even longer than a month, to talk up Johnny Manziel into a first-round draft choice. Now, let's, because I ain't hating on the kid, but it's gotten to the point now where I've heard so much propaganda about this kid, he is turning me off. And before we even go there, let's look at what we've done so far. The draft is going on in day three as we speak. The first quarterback taken was Blake Bortles out of Central Florida. Taken by the Jacksonville Jaguars, who may have Blaine Gabbert 2.0 for all we know, but it doesn't matter. The point is, okay, Bortles, the only thing they had to hang their hat on regarding him was that, well, he beat Teddy Bridgewater when Central Florida beat Louisville by one fucking point on the last play of the game. So that supposedly warrants him collecting this amount of bonus money. Now, it is about the Benjamins when it comes to the draft, because we know these kids, that bonus money is all the real money they're going to see, especially for the first 3 years. You can't tell me Russell Wilson, as great a player as he is, ain't pissed at the likelihood that, you know, he didn't get broken off some of that little some from Jump Street, because he is and was a first-round quality quarterback. But here's the thing that's the rub, G. Bortles gets drafted first. They're saying shit about him. You know, Bridgewater made it to the last part of the first round, and I'm sure in large part the Vikings thought that he was going to be there. And if somehow somebody else had picked up Bridgewater, I don't think they would have lost sleep over it. So they select Bridgewater with the last pick of the first round, which means he'll get some bonus money, but he won't get the bonus money that everybody had talked about the thinking that he was going to get. And that is in large part due to the Mouse and the NFL Network working in concert to make sure that that Negro did not get the big check that they were trying to stop him from getting.
You know, while hearing from Jacksonville, after the fourth game of the season, they were out there right from the beginning. They didn't tell anybody about it.
Sure.
This is making me mad. But you tell me that the Jacksonville Jaguars did not talk to ESPN or anybody that was about it?
Mm-hmm. You know they did. I'm glad you brought up early in the season, too, G, because remember, when the college season started, there were three pitfalls that they were hoping were going to happen scenario-wise. Because, one, Louisville's schedule was considered to be weaker in terms of competition. So they were already starting the drums about, well, you know, who they played against when it came to Bridgewater. And then, of course, we had Stanford and Coach Shaw out there with what looked like a formidable squad that had a shot to do damage. And then, of course, you had Kevin Sumlin down in Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel. So they were hoping against hope that all three of these were going to mean that none of these would happen. And they lucked up. I mean, Louisville obviously lost games. You know, Stanford came up a little short. And, of course, Manziel trying to continue to do the same act that he pulled last year in his sophomore year, rather than his freshman year. You know, the defense wasn't all that great, and so they lost a lot of shootouts. But that's neither here nor there. The issue now is that we're into the third day, and they have spent untold amounts of hype on Manziel. He wasn't even the first quarterback drafted, but they keep talking about him. Talking about now how Cleveland, and I'd love to hear Patrick Farrar chime in on this. I know he's working right now, but I'd love to hear Patrick chime in on this because apparently he's already sold 2,000 more season tickets over in the new dog pound.
Michael, I got to say this.
Please.
I am upset with Manziel. Not because he doesn't go quarterback. Not because he was a first round draft. You know what I'm mad with him? It's because he got away with murder. Let me tell you what I'm talking about here. That summer, I myself, back in football, playing autographs and got paid for that autographs.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the NCAA knew about that.
The NCAA couldn't say shit.
Right.
They couldn't say shit because we know. Natural leadership qualities, And maybe they didn't want to recognize it, but that doesn't change the fact that he was good to go. More polished, more ready than anybody else in that draft. And that includes the much coveted and desired Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III. You heard me say it on this show, G. I said he was the best one. I would take him in a heartbeat. And all he did was get to the Super Bowl and win, did he not? All of these things said, the amount of hype that they are spending on him is to remind everybody that Elvis is in the building. Oh, yeah, so that nigga got there and he got us a Super Bowl. Well, you know what? We got a white boy that can do the same thing he can. And that's what they keep trying to say. Before, Russell Wilson was never used as any kind of yardstick to measure potential with anybody. All of a sudden now, that's the first name comes out their mouths. And Manziel pimped that out, as well as the mouse did, in talking him up. So I don't know if he's going to get a kickback check, and I'm referring to Mel Kiper Jr. and his toupee-wearing ass. The bottom line is he orchestrated this with the blessing of the mouse, with the blessing of the NFL Network, and I am annoyed at the fact that they allowed this to last as long as it did, and they pumped this hype up as long as it did. Now, Cleveland is making money. The Browns, that is, off of this signing. And they know that for 3 years, Johnny ain't going to get no real money in terms of, like, you know, the big, you know, franchise contract. Them days are gone. And Sam Bradford, ironically, is the last beneficiary of that. But here's the thing that needs to be considered. With everything that they're doing right now with these quarterbacks, you've got the other backlash, which is also, to me, attributed to the Russell Wilson effect. And it was just exhibited in the fourth round when the Arizona Cardinals took Logan Thomas. Now, Logan Thomas is this big kid out of Virginia Tech, you know, big rascal, 6'6", about 250, strong arm. Now, his interception-touchdown ratio has not been as good, but it didn't change the fact that obviously the Cardinals saw something in him that they thought they could work with. And, of course, if you got Larry Fitzgerald and Malcolm Floyd and targets like that, well, not Malcolm Floyd, but Michael Floyd, and targets like that, you've got a lot to work with, and you really don't need to do much. And they know Carson Palmer is an interception waiting to happen. So it's ironic that with all the quarterbacks that they could have taken, you know, I mean, A.J. McCarron is out there on the board, and he's crying like a little bitch because, oh, nobody took me, and all I did was win games. I'm being punished because I won games. Shut the fuck up, you know, because what they realize is that there may not be much difference between you and Matt Leinart. I mean, Matt Leinart won games too, didn't he? As a matter of fact, were it not for Texas, Matt Leinart would have tied the collegiate record for wins by a quarterback because there's only one quarterback who is undefeated in his whole college career, and that's Chuck Ealy, who should have been drafted by the National Football League, but those racist bastards wanted him to play cornerback. And Chuck, to his credit, said, fuck y'all, I'm a quarterback. If you're interested in the quarterback, hook me up. If not, I'll see you later. I'm going to Canada. And he goes and wins a Grey Cup, Gary. His first year there is the most valuable player in the championship game and goes on to have a pretty decent career in Canada. But we know we could make the argument that Chuck Ealy was Russell Wilson before Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson.
Yeah. And my question to the NFL is, when is that going to
privileges, you know, your middle name, because that's where he was operating from. And he only put himself in a position of where democracy met convenience when he had the signature incident, when he was signing autographs, because it wasn't fair that Johnny Manziel or any college athlete should get nothing when you know those schools are making big coin off of them, especially in Texas, where Texas football and religion are synonymous with each other. So I didn't have a problem with that. I rooted for him because he was speaking up not just for him, but he was speaking up for all of those kids who were from poor backgrounds, who weren't getting shit, who were getting screwed over by coaches, whose lives were waiting, and were rather wavering on the whim of a coach. Because a coach says you can't play, or a coach is playing politics with you because he's got another young kid that he knows he can plug in, and he doesn't necessarily like your personality, or he tolerates you or anything like that, you're fucked. And you were the one who was sitting there when he came to the house, and he's telling your mother and Pop, and both of them are there saying, well, I'm going to treat Gary Gray like he's my son. You know, all the while they know if Gary Gray can't play, fuck Gary Gray, his ass is gone. So we know what time it is with this. And Manziel was on the side of the righteous when it came to the signature thing, because he has opened up those cans of worms with the NCAA. But now that he's on the other side of this and he's getting paid and he does the money sign, you know, the money sign don't bother me that much. It's the hype that got him into this. It's the hype that the mouse carried on with this. I mean, he could well be a player that will be able to translate his skills to the next level in the National Football League. And I don't have a problem with him that. If he's successful, God bless him. But to ride that hype like he did was annoying. I got tired of hearing about it. I mean, I'm sure Jacksonville thought that Blake Bortles was going to be good for them too, because essentially he's a local kid. He's going to fit in and maybe he'll help sell some tickets. You know, Jacksonville's got a lot of problems. The fact that Bortles wasn't even on the radar until the last month is an indication of how the apparatus through the mouse, through the NFL network, decides who their fair-haired boys are going to be. Now, if you remember, Lee Steinberg used to be the big agent, right? He had all the quarterbacks. And every time a quarterback of some note was up in there, Steinberg was going to be in there to get him. Now, I don't know if the process has changed much in that regard, but clearly we have seen, especially after Jamarcus Russell, Cam Newton, and Robert Griffin III, that there's an extensive effort to ensure that they won't have another brother at quarterback go first round. You know, and Jadeveon Clowney, to a lesser extent, had to suffer for that too, because all of a sudden, you know, they were criticizing him and calling the guy lazy. The guys get triple teamed sometimes playing in South Carolina, and I'm sure he had to wonder, maybe I should have went early and not even worried about what happened that year before, because he seemed to play tentative that way. But the long and short of it is he did get picked first. Houston has a potentially dangerous D-line combo with him and J.J. Watt. But all the noise they made to try to stop him from getting the number one pick is one of the unwritten stories, Gary. And I want your vibe on that.
Well, the thing is they played good cop, bad cop.
I'm going to do your opportunity. I'm
would you like to tell anyone that I'm going to record against the NBS?
But you see, this is the reason why the Manziel situation early on in the season was important. Manziel was in a position to do exactly what you just said. He wasn't Junebug from the projects. He wasn't some poor kid from Key Brother, Mississippi.
Right.
He had weight behind him. And that's why the NCAA had to come to him to kiss his ass. Because he could have done all of the things that you're talking about. And they wanted to make sure that he understood that, well, you know, Johnny, if you play ball with us, we will grease your path to the pro leagues because we won't say anything about you behind your back or try to operate behind your back to undercut any potential you might have had for your pro career. And let's be real, Manziel benefited from the timing of Russell Wilson doing the damage that he did, you know, against Denver in the Super Bowl. Clearly, Seattle was the better team, but it didn't matter because they saw that black man at quarterback and they thought, there's no fucking way they're going to win. So Vegas was happy. The league wasn't as happy, but Vegas was happy because they made their money. The cash continued to flow. Manziel was a compromise. And even though he could have fought City Hall, literally, in fighting against the NCAA, he agreed to not fight and sit out half a game. Now, let's think about what happened to A.J. Green or Dez Bryant. Both of those cats were in similar situations. Ridiculous ones, if you ask me. A.J. Green sells his jersey, and he's told he has to pay the amount of the jersey back to the school. I mean, this is his jersey. He ain't getting shit from them. But he has to pay the amount back to the school. You know, Dez Bryant, we've talked about that dozens of times. He gets a meal. He's going to fucking lunch. And he has a lie about who's going to pay for it because he knew about the NCAA possible sanctions. Now, if you know, that's another story. But the bottom line is he misses a whole year and gets screwed out of a whole year and absorbs all the negative talk that you just said and all the other stuff that goes with it to eventually get lucky enough to get the contract that he needed and show that his play on the field was going to make a difference. To a lesser degree, we have to also talk about LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount was going to be a first-round draft choice, and I said this on the show before, when that boy from Boise State, Byron Hout, called him nigger after that game was over, and we had verified that he said the N-word. So this is not just some hype, so don't get it twisted. When he called him a nigger and LeGarrette knocked him the fuck out, Chip Kelly's punk ass did not speak up for him. They didn't punish Chris Peterson. They didn't punish Boise State because the kid instigated the situation. Because a black man had hit a white man and it was on national television, that kid suffered. And Chip Kelly didn't back him up. So when Chip Kelly came to the Eagles, I was not a happy camper. And I could give a fuck about how many games they win. And I'm a fan. I bleed green. From a fan standpoint, that disturbed me. Because from a journalist standpoint, he's just as liable, and he's part of the whole scene for what the NCAA does, where coaches move on. And I don't care about any color, black or white. Coaches pimp off these kids. They move on. The HBCU coaches, at least, are trying to do something because they know a lot of these kids came from Division I schools, and they got fucked. So they're looking to help them and try to nurture them and make sure that they get at least some semblance of an education so that if they don't become pro players, they've got something in the real world that they can work with.
Right.
Russell Wilson a fair shot it doesn't change the fact that what he did was wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's no different than Kelly leaving Oregon and doing the same thing, leaving those sanctions behind, and of course to pretend like he don't know nothing and whatnot because the little smarmy piece of shit thinks he's the smartest cat in the room. But it doesn't change the fact that what he did was wrong, and the kids suffer for it, and the school suffers for it. But if the school is compliant because they knew, that's a whole other story. And you got to think at this level, Oregon is making gobs of money, and USC is, for all intents and purposes, a de facto pro team in Los Angeles. They know. You know, how can you punish Reggie Bush for making school money? Because that's what Reggie Bush did. You gave Reggie Bush $350,000, whatever it was, purported to be in a house. That was the price of doing business. Can we all agree that Reggie Bush made that school more than $350,000? I would say so. You probably saw back then at those USC games, there were people wearing Matt Leiter jerseys. They were wearing Reggie Bush jerseys. And if there's 100,000 people filling the Rose Bowl every Saturday afternoon when they were really the Trojans, let's say 10% of those jerseys are Reggie Bush jerseys that people are wearing. What's the normal cost for a college jersey now, G? Can we say for Yeah, all right, so let's not even go there. Let's say $50. $50 for a Trojans jersey with Reggie Bush's name on it, or at least with the number 5, so that everybody knows, just like Chris Webber was number 4 in Michigan, everybody knows that Reggie Bush made number 5. I mean, everybody knows O.J. Simpson would have been 32, so it's the same dichotomy. So you weigh all of this. And as we do the math, 10% of those 100,000 people are wearing it. So Reggie, in one game, has made more for that school than they did supposedly in giving them this little side deal, because 10% of those 100,000 people would make it
the agilon on the Jumbotron.
Good point. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking
radio sponsors. Like, yeah, you got to add that too.
You got radio licensing.
Yep.
For their network. So that's probably a million plus per game.
Yep.
TV. That's Pac-10, whatever it is.
Pac-10, yeah, Pac-12 network
now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another 3 to 5 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty soon that adds up to real money.
Yep.
And so we're talking about, let's go out of figure, 10 million per game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 12 games, well, 6 home games a year. Well, actually,
mm-hmm.
at that level, they got a beat down game. That's a home game. Yeah,
that's right.
The conference. And then whoever plays opposite Notre Dame on alternating years,
because mm-hmm.
they don't play that one. So that's 7 home games a year. So that's what 7. So that's 50. That's the total figure.
70 million
a year.
Mm-hmm. Just for that.
Football.
Okay. And we're not even, we haven't even talked bowl games yet.
We haven't talked bowl games. We haven't talked about shoe contract for the school. I just separate another one for the coach. We have not talked about a lot of other stuff. So we're talking about, we're talking about 70 plus another, 25, 30?
You round that shit up, you're talking $100 million.
So we're talking $100 million.
Yeah.
Plus, I have no clue.
Plus, you got to remember, all the teams in the conference, man, get a piece of the pot from any bowl games that they match up in addition to their cut of a TV contract.
You haven't gotten into some sort of official licensing stuff because there is an official USC car. There is an official USC building supply place, which is something for me as far as anyone, but they do that. There is an official drink. It's usually the Coke or Pepsi. One hour, pass out somebody. And if it's 100,000 plus at Winston-Salem State, you can imagine.
Or start at
high school. Bringing in a middle-sized metropolis every
or like seven times during your season. And then, you know, realistically, you know, you almost get from UCLA or USC, so I mean, that's a home game too. I don't care what you know, I'm sure they guys are better, but where it's like a 3-5 and 5 and vice versa on opposite years. But at the same time, though, you're talking about bringing in a whole heap of people. And, and I thought they were, see, I'd have to say, God, I'm going to pay $50 a park. I'm sorry. You know, toy got to be cheaper than the parking. And I cannot see this because, I mean, when we go to Seattle, like the biggest record in Charlotte, you know, it's not banking or finance, it's parking. And it's $20 a day. Especially like my Thursday, Friday, Saturday in the Seattle, it's $20 a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were able to finagle something this year because of some blue water bottle, but that's another story for another time. But even there, we spent, well, we didn't spend $20 on parking for the week, so we got away with murder almost, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
That was only because of an arrangement we made, really, by being nice to people. Well,
mm-hmm.
having said that, they're not nice, and I'm sure. And I'm sure, I don't know if LA has a transit system that allows you to park and ride or that kind of stuff or not. But that would be what I would be doing. Because
yeah.
I mean, it's not going to rain. You're talking about Southern California. It's not going to rain, as a rule. So, I mean, $50 for parking, I'd have to see a gun. But, you know, when you look at the business side of this, that's all factored in. Because even at Winston, you know, if you're not one of the horns, so you pay, let's say, $1,000 a year, you get free parking and some good parking. And you still, if you don't pay that, well, I get parking passes anyway. But, you know, my giving back thing is get $1,000 and get a parking pass up close and nice place for a tailgate and all those other kind of good things. You know,
yeah.
which is another thing that Gary didn't mention. Well, I don't know if they tailgate in Southern California, but I'm in the South. That's
mm-hmm.
why I go to church. You don't go to church, you know, without games on. You don't go.
There you go.
You know, football game. You gotta sacrifice something on the altar. But
mm-hmm.
you know, there are places that charge you here in the South. There are places that charge you like, I remember seeing this video. This was several years ago. It was like $100 a day for your parking space. Now, mind you, this parking space is for like 3 days. You come in Friday
okay.
and leave Sunday.
Right.
And it's like $100 but for your place to tailgate, you know, that's probably $500 for around, you know, how long you have in addition to your parking space for your RV.
Mm-hmm.
And then down at the Bayou Classic,
yeah.
You park your RV Wednesday night, you move it Sunday.
Yeah.
And in between, you roast, and you do your sacrifices.
Right.
You know, and whatever it may be, you know, you can see, which means we also have not addressed the external food part of this business.
Good point. That's right. But
so
before we even go there,
you know, the pot.
Yep. But before we even go there, let's consider this, since Gary brought up HBCUs. As we're all watching the draft here, now we know in the last few years there have been less and less HBU players taken, period. I mean, now that's, you know, when the NFL Network started going back in time and went from 1964 every 10 years until this particular draft, you heard how their spin changed when they talked about how certain guys were keys, like the gentleman who helped the Pittsburgh Steelers form their team by drafting all those brothers from the HBCUs, and in 64 when Bob Hayes and a whole gaggle of others came out from the HBCUs and started to make an impact. But all of these things fall in line with the reality that when Steve McNair was signed in the first round, we knew or we had a rough idea as to the amount of bonus money that he was going to get. And he was the last HBCU player, to my recollect, who went in the first round and got first round bonus money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know the talent has long gone from there, but we also know that this is part of the business as well.
because they've sopped all that business away and siphoned it away from the HBCUs, unless it's the seventh round or a supplemental pick, they know now that market, that well has been tapped. They're not going to go there unless somebody turns out to be such a talent that they stand out above the pack and that they are going to be serviceable. And even with that, they're not going to let them get any real money because, you know, they think they're doing them a favor by selecting them. And I got Cheryl in the mix as well, but go ahead with that, Fred, please.
Well, not only, you know, what you're talking about is the great Bill Nunn Jr. who just passed away. Actually, he passed away while we were talking, I think, the other night, talking about him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really sad because there are those people who think that black folks have no talent in picking talent. And, you know, the reality is Bill Nunn was, you know, he was a star athlete in his own right because he was. You know, we talk about Earl Lloyd coming out of Bobby Wilson coming out of West Virginia State. But guess who his teammates were? Bill Nunn Jr. and Joe Gilliam, his father. Joe Gilliam is here. They were all teammates. And in fact, they matriculated to West Virginia State at the same time. They were classmates. And he knew HBCU talent like few did, and none of the white folks knew anything about him because they didn't avoid it. Most of them
didn't avoid it. Right.
He knew talent, because back then you could just walk on a black college campus being a white person and say, hey, I want your boy. No, you got to have a relationship here. Jake Gaither probably the best example of that. Jake Gaither approved all contracts to include Bob Hayes, and there was other people who wanted Bob Hayes. And Tex Fram was probably the most legitimate slash honest one that they had, and he basically told all of them to go to hell, and they had to because it was his program. And remember, just a few years earlier, you had Willie Gallimore, who by the time Hayes came out, as was already gotten killed in a wreck along with one of his teammates.
And they probably never would have drafted Gale Sayers if Gallimore had survived.
If Gallimore had not been in that class, you may have heard of Gale Sayers, but he would not have been a Bear.
No, he wouldn't have been. No, I agree. 1,000%.
And see, among the people that you have out there who not only came under the watch eye of people like Bill Nunn and Earl Lloyd was the other, who basically built not only the Kansas City Chiefs' first Super Bowl teams, he built the western part of the AFL. So, you know, because he covered for the Houston paper, he covered the SWAC. So he knew the SWAC inside and out. And, you know, there's several stories about how he, they tried to, it was more like a kidnapping of Otis Taylor. All the Taylor, Otis up downstairs, Otis up be right there. And he left whoever was babysitting him, he left them in their room. He called out the bathroom window, he went downstairs and got in the car with Lloyd and, Lord Wells, and Lord Wells cut him off and got him signed with the Kansas City Chiefs.
We laughed at that, but they were trying to kidnap this kid. But that's just how dastardly they were and how naive some of those kids were back then. And if you didn't have people there that would protect their interests, who knows how bad the situation would have been. You know, they really would have been making next to nothing.
Even Earl and Rose first country with $110,000, he could have got more, but they basically badgered him until he gave up. I mean, you know, you got a kid from the streets of Philadelphia. You know, these numbers are like a foreign language to him.
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, Coach Gaines was out of town and he came back, the deed had been done. And then they try to get him again, and this time he had an agent for real, and his agent, basically said, okay, you won't pay, we won't play, and he ended up in New York, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. I want to throw Cheryl in the mix here because, as you mentioned, Philadelphia, she is the mistress of Mount Airy. First of all, good afternoon, Cheryl. How you feeling, sweetie?
Good afternoon, guys. Hi.
Hi, Cheryl. Now, I'm going to Cheryl. I have avoided cussing about the Eagles yet, Cheryl, because I was going to save that for you.
Oh, God. I don't know. Please. I don't know what the hell they were thinking about when they got rid of her. I don't know. He's gone, my Vic gone, but we knew Mike Vic was gonna go, but
right.
It's my honest opinion, when it came to Mike Vic, he should have sat on that bench and made that check. To my point, I'd have made them pay my contract down. Bottom line. I don't know what it is. I mean my brother played back football and stuff. I don't know what it is to me to get in a game like that, but if you were smart and thinking, I wouldn't know what you're dealing with.
But I think in this case, Cheryl, Mike was smart because they wouldn't have kept Mike. They'd have gave him a reduced contract or they would have cut him straight away because he would have been considered too expensive for the front office, because that's how they've been doing business for the last, 10 years at least? Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
I would have promoted the biggest punk in the world to be the next quarterback.
Well, see, the thing about it is, too, our brothers need to learn how to get class-type contracts. The white boys do it all day long. We need to represent a little bit better than what we are doing. I hate to see Mike Vick go, because he's only going to go someplace else and get beat the hell up, because they have no respect for him as a player.
I think they just blocked for him that last year. How many years has it been for the dog? You know what I mean? Seven years. And they keep bringing it up. When they still keep bringing the damn dog shit, a white boy's been fighting dog years. It just ain't got caught. It just ain't got caught yet. It's gonna happen, but it ain't happening yet. It is a way of life down south. Yes, it is. As we say this, Johnny Manziel doing the money sign again for Gary. You know, Gary, before I go to you first, Cheryl, one more question, because as a fan, how do you feel about Chip Kelly now? You just mentioned the Deshaun thing. You just mentioned Mike Vick gone. What do you feel about it? I didn't like the thing about him being associated with gangs.
Who do you know that plays football? Don't know somebody from damn gang that you grew up.
Thank you.
I didn't like the way he fought his reputation. That I did not like. So, I don't like him as a Chip Kelly as a coach because, I'm sorry, your old coach wouldn't have allowed him. He wouldn't allow him. Okay? No, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. You could, if you wanted to get rid of him, get rid of him. But don't throw shade in the game and try to kill a man's reputation so he can't get paid. Let him get paid. What's the name going to let him get paid? If you're going to get rid of him, he's going to let him get paid.
Yeah. And let's remember that.
He's going to get paid plus, I think he should be worth at least two touchdowns and several receptions.
Easy.
He's probably going to get a damn ring, okay? I got Cowboy Reggie in the mix here as well, and Cowboy,
you've been talking about Mike Vick forever. That's from your neck of the woods. That brother's been there a long time. You know, now he's on. We know what the Eagles have lost, and that they were going to move on because they wanted this kid to be the quarterback. But the bottom line in all of this is Mike goes to New York. And Deshaun leaves. And I'm trying to be as objective as possible here, but I know Chip Kelly's an asshole. But now that opens the door for your Cowboys, and it's got to change the situation down in Washington. So as you've been watching the draft or getting reports in, what's your overview of the NFC East right now? Who's done what draft-wise better than the others? And how do you see the season if you would put your GM hat on and do some Negro Domus action?
You know, call me crazy, call me stupid. Every time we think the Giants are counted out, they go to the Super Bowl and win. First of all, I don't know what it is. Giants' record. Because still, when they gave that clown the wide receiver, Mr. Race and stuff, that ain't contract, I was still thinking some unmatched in that team. I mean, what does that say when you give a person like that a contract and before the season even started, they had some push and shove in the locker room? As far as the Dallas Cowboys, they were seriously thinking about getting Manziel. Now, see, this shows you right now what Jerry Jones doesn't care about winning. He cares about getting dust in the seat. I mean, seriously, you get Romo, this clown, this big money, and then he was actually considering strongly to bring in the show, Mr. Money Football. And another thing, the NFL has this problem with betting, but yet when Money comes out, he does the Money sign. Now, again, call me crazy, call me stupid, but this is the same organization that frowns on betting. Oh, excuse me. This is the number one organization that most people bet on is football? Can y'all help a brother out? I mean, maybe I'm looking at, you know, my Steven Spielberg conspiracy, but he comes up with the money, and all of a sudden now they say, well, you still want to work with LeBron James and his
money? It's a valid point,
Cheryl. Here they come. They come in trying
it's
to break
a valid
the
point. Cheryl, if you saw a black quarterback, Cheryl, going across that stage doing the money side, what do you think they would have said to him?
What they would have been was good. He would have been good. He would have been gangster. He'd have been gangster. Going across the stage. And it would have made a big deal about it.
Yep.
That's what they would have done.
It said that's not classy. You should be a role model, you know. Jameis Winston made an appearance at the supermarket. He signed autographs. and he took the crab legs and okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and they said they got it. Like there was
like anybody else, he walked up into the store. And when the people saw him, it was the five people that want an autograph. Now, if he hadn't been an autograph, you know what they would have said. Well, he tried to
come
in and try to get people autographs and everything. And he got one person, the other, and said, don't worry, we got the gym. She walked out. All of a sudden, it's a big deal. But in the interest of time, he's back on the baseball team. You hear nothing about it. And all of a sudden, charge is going to be dropped. But yet, he tried to come in.
And the mouse didn't say anything about the charges being dropped, of course.
Thank you. Yeah, those same people with those autographs will go right to eBay and they went and going to sell them because of his signature. Now, nobody said anything
right.
about that. Capital letters
about it. That's part of the business. The kids are getting pimped out.
That's
ain't no doubt about that shit. Yep. But again, the HBCU kids are not going to get drafted because all of those kids that would have went there 20 years ago, they're gone. They've already been picked. The well has been
sitting on a bench at schools.
That's exactly right.
Those are people from Purdue. It wasn't actually two of those kids, one in particular, because and it's close to me because I coached his mom years ago. Because she was a cat student, she was a three sport athlete at Fayetteville State, and was also an honor student. So, Carlos Fields is a Winston-Salem State product. And yes, he helped her a certain school from Virginia, Newland, and we played the NCAA championship issue, but I digress. But still, on a serious tip, you're talking about a kid who, realistically, as late as the middle of last season, if a player play, he wanted to be a teacher. That's what his mom did. And he was all about getting his education. He set out his freshman year to get a good college start. And put on a good film. And so he will tell you no, because I purposely didn't follow the draft this year because I think it's a bunch of crap. But still, here's a kid who didn't have Menzel or anybody else's syndrome. He was in college. He played football. He played very well. Two-time defensive player of the year kind of stuff. He made all the right moves academically. It was all about, good football. He was on two national championship teams and three conference championship teams. So where is the mouse or any other maggots out there who want to talk about this academic crap or when do they talk about kids like him?
They don't.
They never come too far positive when it comes to us. They always try to pick out the negative. We've got a lot of kids that are struggling, they're playing sports, they do what they're supposed to do, the right thing, and they don't collect anything at the end. You know what I mean? It's a lot of them. A lot of them.
There's a young man from St. Olaf who graduated a couple of days ago, they had their graduation this week. This young man is deaf and graduated. And was all conference.
Yeah.
And he graduated with honors, and he's deaf. So where?
Gary mentioned him before.
They did something on him about being deaf. How he plays and how he learns to play and everything.
No, you're right, Jake. You're right. I would love to know what it feels like for him to knock somebody the fuck out, knowing that they know he hit the kid. But they can't talk shit to him because he ain't going to hear. I can imagine the sign language going on for that.
I've talked to several people who knew him personally, great young man. And to their credit, I've only known, and I've been around seeing all sports for 30 plus years. the middle of assets are kind of there. It's very small. Yeah. It's just something about the school, and it's in that other school, you can be the biggest moron in the world at those bigger schools. But you go to high school, you got some people who put you in check, so they don't care that you think you might go to the pros. You know, it's like we had situations, you know, because I was surprised when some of the stuff that went on at, like at Virginia State, a couple of other schools, these off-the-cuff fraternity/groups.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's like, I would never, you know, one of the reasons that I remember that Jake Gibbs said one of the reasons he left coaching was he saw a change, and this was nothing like what we see now, but he said, I saw a change because he normally, you know, he had hate and that kind of stuff. But the principal would step in and say, okay, cut it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I walked in, and my captains were in the middle of it. He said, now, he, and this was in 68, he said, I think I've lost control. You never hear this craziness that you've got to deal with now. But, you know, this is what that, see, this is the difference between coaching, because he, you know, Bill Haynes used to do this thing where he caught you doing something. You know, he says, okay, I'll see you more at 6 o'clock. Well, that means you own the track at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to run you to 6:30. And then at 6:30, he cut his lights off and leave.
Yeah.
And you ran on the honor system, and you said, I sit in the car and go to sleep. So, you know, my thing was, you're going to report, and, you know, and these guys were held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm.
I got no problem with holding athletes to a higher standard, because you do represent the university. But, you know, come on. At some point, you know, you got to understand that there is a measure of craziness in all of us. How
got
we deal with that craziness, you know, is up to us. But at the same time, though, it's checked. You know, and I've talked to some family that we brought in from other schools, from these bigger schools, who played for West in the last few years. And over the years in general, but just the last few years especially, you know, one guy was amazed. He went to a Northern university.
Mm-hmm.
He was amazed. You know, the coach sits you down and tell you, this is what I'm going to tolerate and this is what I'm not going to tolerate. And if I catch you not going to class, you don't worry about your coordinator when they're being able to up your ass. It's going to be me. I promise your parents you're going to get an education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Big House did it with Earl Monroe. You know, you want to go back home? Explain to your mom why you're coming back home.
There you go.
That was the gist of it. You know, we
hardly
do too bad.
Yeah. It's an intriguing premise because there's a subplot that we haven't touched on yet. And Cheryl, Gary, Fred, before the draft came on, and right in the midst of the hype being turned up all the way, the kids at Northwestern University were voting on a Friday afternoon whether or not to be certified as a union. When it came to, you know, the process of being on the field being their workplace, and all of that stuff. So, well, ladies first. Cheryl, this really isn't an issue now about whether or not college athletes should get paid or not. I think they all should get paid. But the concept of the union coming into the mix, I think, is even more important. And I think it's because of that union thing that if kids are made more aware of what's going on, because Fred made this point last week, and it makes sense. If they're just visiting college, they don't really give a shit about what's going on there because they think they're going to get that million-dollar contract after one and done. But if they're there for a while, and if they're members of a union and they see the process through, say, 3 or 4 years of school, and they get a taste of understanding that what they're doing out there in that field ain't really much different from what they're going to do when they get a real job in the workforce. That is a real job that they're doing out there on that field, and they should be compensated, and they should be protected, and get proper medical care without their mothers or fathers thinking that that's got to come out their pocket.
What do I think about the union? I think it's a great idea because so many things have gone to foreign countries and things like this, and we should start protecting our kids and getting them ready for the real world. Because there's a bitch out here to get a job. Whether you are a star football player, because all it takes is one injury, and then what? If you hadn't followed your education while you playing ball, basketball, football, baseball, you get injured, then what? And our kids, as much as we talk about it, the reality is these parents, some of these parents don't let them have them thinking in the real world. This is a possibility. This can happen. You might not make it. You might not have to be out in all the cars and bitches and everything as they won't put it. You know what I mean? And a lot of black people that think they have a star, NBA basketball player, next battle or wonderful thing, they don't prepare their kids for it, and they're thinking, you're going to take care of me. No, you need to teach them about the real world. And that's teaching them about the real world, because they're learning, they're earning, and they're learning about the real world. I think it's a great thing.
It's no disrespect, Gary or Fred, that these kids from Northwestern, which is supposed to be a high quality academic school, thought this concept up first. I'm sure, you know, it was a matter. Go ahead.
Remember, they may have come out with it, and they're at the Division I level, or they will actually talk about it. But remember, before we heard Northwestern students were even talking about anything, there was this place called Gremlin.
I stand corrected. That's true. Hey, Gremlin was first with this.
White schools have had it made for 1,000 years. Black schools have struggled. You know, black kids at Notre Dame were more than willing to go sit in the back of the bus and go through the back door on the good Catholic school and eat what else you want to eat. Black kids were very well versed in the karma of big white schooldom. But if it was those black kids from A&T who marched down and walked and sat at the counter, Ramblin's players were the Greensboro Four all over again. And the movement did not start at Northwestern, it started at Grambling State University.
I guess I stand corrected on that. I wasn't trying to make the point that they were first in the sense of historical standpoint. I'm talking about on just this issue of unions, they were first in terms of getting it out to such a degree, that they couldn't stifle it. That's the difference for me, because when they started talking about this, they tried to poo-poo it. And you know for a fact, if this had been talked about first, NCANT or St. Aug or any other black school, they would have buried it. They wouldn't have said shit about it. And the black papers wouldn't have helped the process, because they would have stifled it too. And that's what irks me. Now that it has been out, you know, your point is out. I mean, you're right on that. But what I'm talking about now is with this concept of unions coming into play and kids understanding the big picture, HBCUs have always understood big picture. I'm not diminishing that. But I'm saying now, this will affect the structure of college sports, because unions cut through all of that. We know where you are and all along that south. All of those states are right to work states. And we brought this up before, and it's amazing that it hasn't been brought out what the actual result of their vote at Northwestern was. But if the football players are part of a union, and you're in a state that doesn't allow for unions or has a bad union attitude regarding whether or not they should be there, that changes the dynamic altogether when it comes to getting players down there. They have to change their tactics, and we know how far they've gone to try to disrupt it. We know that the governor of Tennessee was trying to convince Volkswagen that they had this shit covered, and Volkswagen said no. But that's how far the corruption is in order to try to keep it a non-union situation. The Volkswagen said they weren't having this, and they're out of the mix. So even though that was Northwestern, and Illinois is a union state, you know, how is that going to play down there in Tennessee? How is that going to play at Alabama or Auburn if this union thing goes further, the NCAA has already tried to fight the cracks of this whole structure that they built. But what's going to happen now when all of this goes full tilt and Northwestern successfully votes in?
You want me to address that?
Please, yeah, you first.
Nick Saban will lose his mind because he will have to shut up kids because he's making out them kids, with those kids. And then all the dumb Alabamans will come out talking about how they gonna, how positive music they're going to poo poo it when it comes to these young men and young ladies. You know, and you and I know, you know, the big thing with young ladies is not breaking their nails, is blowing out their ACLs, but, you know, that's another subject. That, but, you know, but these are kind of things that, that come about, you know. When you look at what these young people go through, because I know, y'all know if you remember a young lady in Shea Rouse, she's my hometown. He went to, initially went to Connecticut. And, you know, that little pain in her knee, she blew out on both knees. So she ultimately caused her career, she's in coaching and so forth. Now doing, she's on, I think she's on the Connecticut staff now. But anyway, she's doing well in that. But, you know, her career was blown out because of torn ACLs. But to this day, nobody can figure out why these things go out so bad on women. Well, see, we know that is one of the major injuries that women suffer at a rate very much higher than men. Why? And nobody seemingly has done their due diligence to address this issue for women, including a lot of women and men and women coaches. Nobody can testify why these numbers are so high. Well, why not? And maybe with the union, there needs to be some kind of real research done to start figuring this out. Maybe when braces, the way men play, who play football, especially linemen, wear those braces that has helped them for a couple of years. Maybe.
Yeah.
Just maybe. And see, but you know, going back to the money side of this, maybe now we will get coaches who don't have practice at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so they can be home at 5, 6 o'clock with their families. You got to pack all your classes in 8 o'clock. And be, you know, you got to eat at a certain time because you got to go practice.
That's right.
So you got a roughly 5-6 hour window. You got to practice. You got to put in what 18 hours of classes, which falls down to six hours of classes during the day.
Right.
So, you know, when you know, and then that doesn't include any kind of film sessions in the evening and weightlifting and additional training and going to a training room. You know, all of it cannot be
You might actually have to have an atmosphere where a student is really going to actually get a chance to be a student, because union rules would dictate that they can't spend but X amount of time on the field per day. And that may affect Cheryl's injuries. Y'all saw the game. Y'all saw it when that kid from Louisville broke his leg on national television. You know, what would happen if he was in a union situation where he's regulated to only practice a certain amount of time per day, because it would be a union violation, which would lead to workmen's compensation. I've been beating that drum for a long time, but it's a logical argument. And since I don't do logic, I know that shit makes sense to everybody.
It begins because of bad eyes. Every year, across this country, 15 kids become bad eyes playing football. Nobody talks about that. Nobody says a word about that. 15 kids per year get bad eyes.
Gary, remember, I have no clue what his name was, but remember this young kid who played
Ruckus?
No. This kid was a hockey player. He got tripped or something, went into the pool. And he was paralyzed for life in his first minute of his first freshman year game.
Jesus.
He didn't play game time enough to rest.
He
You're talking about information. There is never too much information. And I don't say that because I broker and all this other kind of self-information. There's never too much information. I don't care how you want to look at it. You, one of the worst things that I have ever heard was, I got into it, there's a young man from here locally who I didn't realize that was his mom I was talking to. I was talking about how lazy he was and how bad attitude he had and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, different ones had approached that information towards her, but then she denied it, the husband denied it, several other people denied it. This boy ended up going to four different schools. He ended up graduating from another school that he didn't play football for or try to play football for. And, you know, he's in a program now where he's actually working with kids who, of all things, have bad attitudes. Mm-hmm. And one thing we tell them is, listen, I was on my way to the pros, but it was my attitude, not my altitude. It was my attitude that ended up screwing me. Because when the pressure was put on me to do better, I said, heck with it. And see, this is the kind of environment that helps and nurtures. You know, that person, you know, we all know that professor as well as that coach who put up a hand and didn't care that you, I'll report you. I don't care. I got another job.
That's right.
And see, because of that, these are some of the things that our kids need.
Yes, it is.
Of them. You know, I mentioned a young lady who I met at a basketball game from Lincoln University. And, you know, it was refreshing because I used to joke with her because, you know, first of all, she's actually an African, so she has a different attitude about a lot of things anyway. But it was easy dealing with her because, you know, when I met a young lady, I met several young ladies, one person, I lay out the rules. Me doing this, me doing that, me doing that, now let's talk. And, you know, we got along great. We still get along great now that she's been out of school over a year now. And, you know, she's getting ready to go to graduate school after and getting some family stuff straight. And I say, you know, the thing that I find so rewarding with doing this with black kids is that those that you have leveled with stay with you. This is why Haiti Robinson and the boys will come back to see her. This is why different ones, and this is the kind of environment you can and see. The biggest thing it's going to do is it's going to kill some coaches, especially some quote-unquote great ones. You're going to discover that with proper information, these kids cannot be screwed over the way they've been, the way it's been happening. It can be your program, but guess what? We got somebody who looks into your program, takes certain aspects of it apart. You know, what is it about football that's so hard that you got to practice for 4 hours? Your body, your body's been shut down after two. So why are you rather trying to pound this in this guy? You know, and think about it. If you play in the game, you don't play no 2 hours.
That's right.
You know,
you play, if it takes more than five plays, you know, that's maybe 2.5, 3 minutes. Then you go to the bench.
There you go.
Anything longer than that, you know, you remember, they do everything in practice. It's like over repetition. Well, if you play offensive line, it's not a sweep, it's not a trap. You're just driving straight ahead 5-6 yards. But you do it over and over. You do that a week far beyond what you would do in a game because you got to call plays.
Yeah.
It's not that, you know, in practice, we'll run it again. Well, you know what you would just call, so you just run it again. So in one minute, you can run the same play 7-8 times.
Yeah.
Your body is not built for that. So this is why you have, you know, these are kind of, you see, this is the kind of thing with the union you can't do. You know, it only takes that one jerk of a coach.
That's right.
Like that Magda was at Rutgers or wherever it was.
Oh yeah, and you know they made him a broadcaster, an analyst for the draft. Greg Schiano, that jackass.
Why is a mouse can only find losers and incompetents to be broadcasters? That's something I was going to mention when I was talking about the young man. You know, remember what an asshole people said Bobby Knight was.
Yep.
Yeah.
But remember the young man who got paralyzed, not in a game, but really doing something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to, you know, he saw him speeding, hydroplane.
Yep.
You
that's
know,
right.
Bobby Knight, what was called, you know, Bobby Knight was one of the first ones to him. It wasn't about basketball, it was about living.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've always given Bobby Knight credit for that.
And, you know, he says, Coach, I can't play basketball anymore. He said, dumbass, I didn't bring you here just to play basketball. You got an education. He said, I'm going to kill you. You know. Make sure your parents don't kill him. Well, the young man did get a degree, even though he, I think he's
dying. Hold on a second, because I got to get Gary in to do his spot before the co. Gary, I know as we've all talked about last week, the issue of the girls in Nigeria has been a long-standing issue now since we started talking about it. Give us your preview of the Cove and some other information about what's going to go on for your programming this weekend.
First off, bring our girls back. Bring our girls back. That's the first thing. Second thing, I'm going to do the overview of the Raiders and the Tigers and drafting. I'll also do the Yankees are retiring their number six, number two. We all know who number two is, but retiring number.
Yes, Roy White and Gary Jeter.
Number six is Joe Torre, and number two is Gary Jeter.
Number six was going to be for Roy White. Now, I know Joe Torre. I wasn't even being facetious, but I don't even think about Joe Torre and his number. Because Roy White wore that six, and he should have given some consideration.
I
agree. They did Dickie and Yogi Berra with the same number. Why couldn't they do the same for Roy White and Joe Torre?
Yeah.
Let's see.
On the music box of that day, we'll be doing New Jersey's old Isley Brothers.
All right, Mr. Biggs and the Isleys. I like that. Good combination. Well, that's the Great Upper Cove, 4 o'clock today. We pick up on the conversation regarding where the Raiders and Niners are, the issues in Nigeria. And on Sunday, Mr. Biggs with the Isleys. It should be a solid week of programming, y'all. Weekend of programming. Indeed, brother. We'll see you at the top of the hour. You know, Fred, I didn't mean to interrupt, but please go where you are, and then we're going to jump into that chair and get Cheryl's opinion on this to start off, because we hadn't heard from her with this, but go ahead, Fred, where you were going.
No, you know, the thing I was talking about was, you know, here's a man that people want to villainize. And now, there are times I think, I thought Bobby Knight was crazy. I read one of his books, and he talked about, you know, what did he fall right up? And the biggest thing Bobby Knight was ever afraid of was he would have a young man with more talent than he had, which was not that hard to have. He was afraid of a guy with more talent than he had that never put it all out there just to see what he could do. This is why he got Steve Alford won his many national title bids. Being spoken with 3 Hall of Famers,
yep.
Pete Perkins, Jordan,
yep.
And Worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What coach has gone undefeated other than
Bobby Knight.
He won a national championship.
Yep.
He lost one game in 2 years. And see, people, you know, they have villainized him, and they even thought he was a black coach the way he gets treated sometimes. Because this is what they've done for years. Nobody can find any good that he's ever done. At the same time, though, if you take just a few minutes and look, he has the wins. He has, his players were graduating at a rate higher than Dean Smith's.
Mm-hmm.
He had very few guys who were telling him to leave early, so they went to 4 years. And those, the guys told my nephew when Scott May's son was playing at Carolina, his dad would have killed him because his dad played harder than he ever played.
Yeah.
His dad, this whole Liberty thing is not. And his dad didn't have near the talent, but he played hard. And he played with a team that played harder as a team. And, that's what happens a lot of times with these kids. Now they get blown out of proportion because if you don't dissect the game down to what do they actually do and how do they do it together, the difference between Cleo Hill and Earl Monroe was Earl Monroe had skills that his team worked to make better. Cleo Hill had skills that his team did not work to make better. And that's the difference. But as an individual player, Earl was just great. Cleo was what I had nothing. I talked to Cleo's son on the room going over. I said, well, today's environment we got rough with him. They got rough with him, but remember, your dad was one of the best conditioned athletes who ever breathed. And I said, you watched some film of him, and you saw they got rough with him. So, instead of going on the bus, he shot two corners from 25 feet away. He said, you stand there and play this all you want. I'm aiming from here. And so, we this whole thing with the unions and whatnot, you don't have the big house games of Bobby Bonds and John McClendon and, those old school coaches who look out for the boys.
Right.
There were guys they kept on the team or they kept, like one kid I know who was associated with Winston. He could, big house said, well, that boy couldn't play dead. But he was a good kid. So I made my manager. And, the young man went on to school. He went on to school, preschool. Went on and did very well. I mean, he died, 2 years before House died, 1703. And as I was one of the coaches, I saw this thing that I asked Coach James about this white boy, and that boy was hanging up in that boy in white Cajun.
Mm-hmm.
One of his former, somebody he knew sent his kid to him at Winston-Salem State. He was a good ball player, don't get me wrong. He came from some country school out of Louisiana. He said, listen, we're going to be on the road all night. And we stop at some restaurant. He could walk in the front door and get us something to eat. So that was his job.
Mm-hmm.
And he dressed with me. I said, what happened to him? Well, he's some kind of surgeon. He retired as some kind of surgeon about 5-6 years before he passed. But
there
he wanted to become he took his teacher education degree and medical school, out of medical school, and went on into becoming a top surgeon in the state of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw him, I thought, well, who on earth is this white boy? That boy ain't white. But see, that's the system you don't even need you in because, hey, coaches looked out for players. And it wasn't that we were just going to run them off. No.
Yes.
The guy who sent these players out of Philadelphia, Whitney was sent to him by somebody else. But he looked up for Whitney. Whitney turned around and sent him people like Earl Monroe and Cleo.
Yeah.
Big House never saw neither one of them play as high school players.
Wow. It's interesting to see what's going to happen if this union thing does manifest itself into something bigger, because just like HBCU schools, all schools have to be compliant. The issue of compliance is going to come into bigger vogue as this thing gets bigger, because if they don't comply, there's going to be union issues and legal issues that are going to get in the way of Saturday afternoon. So this is going to be about as much about adaptation as well as if it comes that way, because we know the NCAA will do everything they can to prevent it. I mean, even the officials at Northwestern tried to discourage the players from doing it, but it's an interesting place where to go, and it'll be interesting to see where they see this thing handle itself after the draft is over and after a lot of the hype has died down. But because Gary is going to bring this up, I want to take our moment to talk about what happened in Nigeria. And Cheryl, you know, this whole thing started 3 weeks ago. You know, Bobby Booker came in and offered us some additional insight and all, but I'm more upset at the fact that these girls weren't considered valuable. Now, we already know here they get devalued, but there's a lot of vibe that says the Africans didn't value them either. And we've seen in other cultures how women get devalued. So I just want your take on this, is what you think is going on, and what we, regarding us being the U.S., should be doing regarding this.
We know in a lot of these foreign countries and the Muslim religion, and I have nothing against Muslims, but the reality is they're not going by the Quran.
That's right.
What they're teaching is not from the Holy Quran, which is the basis mm-hmm. of the religion. So for them to take these innocent girls because they're being educated and their country is not valued. But this is what I'm talking about. What's in Africa? You have a white man taking all your riches and your gold out of it. You don't value your women. I'm sorry to say that this is a lot of ways of God punishing them for all the things that they have done to women.
Uh-huh.
And for this man to take these girls or to be educated, shame on
yep.
them. And as far as the United States, they have to tread lightly because they don't know their way through the jungle and shit over there.
Uh-huh.
Especially when
good point. Out.
Why would we want to put more of our men in harm's way? We learned that out in Afghanistan with the fighting and over there in Iraq and Iran, that they don't know their way and they don't know how to fight like those guerrilla players. Why would we want to put boots down and put more people in harm's way? Yes, we can advise them and try to see if we can find them, but we don't know that country like they do. And it's something that Africa needs to get together and do on their damn own.
I agree. There's a large part. A large part of compliance here is with the
These are their children. What do you mean you don't know? Nobody knows nothing? Really?
Mm-hmm.
I find it
when on an airplane, when does it happen that nobody knew nothing?
Thank you.
And like I was saying the other night, Cheryl, I'm not sure what's going on at Fort Bragg right now, but I know that the helicopters have been quiet for the last few days. And I know that the Marines are here shooting the 198s, and I can hear the things on the wall around in the rest of the Marine Corps. They don't, you know, the 18-hour rules up signs going up several situations here that make you wonder, okay. Because, you know, we have church members in the military, and like just as recent as Wednesday night, they were not there, which is a little out of the ordinary. But, you know, so there may be, I'll just say this, but there's probably more going on than we know that it's going to be talked about publicly.
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that we're never going to know that go on, because my brother was military special forces for 18 years. A lot of things.
And so you know about how he disappeared from where he was in the middle of whatever he was doing. You know, his people go off or whatever. I'll see you later. Or it may not even go that far. I'm gone.
The last time my brother was deployed to Iraq, we were there. And my brother just walked around and looked at his house and his wife and his kids. And my mother could see him just looking at his house like maybe it might be the last to be here. You know, it's a hell of a thing because I watched my brother be deployed so many times. And he has lost friends because of the shots that they shot him up with. My brother has shakes of his hands and everything. They have no explanation for a lot of this stuff. But how I feel about it, I feel like Africa needs to pull up their bookstring and stop genocizing each other. And I really get pissed off when they come here with their superior attitudes and genocide their own damn people.
You got
all these damn girls missing and don't nobody want. And this bastard on the TV telling you we going to sell them that slave.
Mm-hmm.
But don't nobody know them.
I agree totally with you, Cheryl, because
yep.
I have Muslims in my family, and they tell me that this is totally opposite of what they have espoused for years.
This is not what the religion is about.
No.
It's not about it. So where all this thinking comes from and all these radical Muslims, this is not what's in the Quran. It is not the religion. It does not say that a woman is not to have an education or anything. It's not in there. This is man-made.
This is more than man-made. I think there's a strong political fight to this. And there was a blog by African journalists who asked a question that made a lot of sense. He said, actually it was a she. She said, while we appreciate what the Americans are thinking in supporting this with the Bring Back the Girls and all the social media stuff, she's thinking because the U.S. has done so much dick dastardly stuff in Africa on the covert tip, this will only give them an invitation to do more in the guise of supposedly fighting the girls. And we know Nigeria has been at war with themselves and with their tribal thing for a long-ass time. And never mind all the colonialism stuff. There's a lot of stuff in this mix here that puts some meat in the sandwich of what this writer is implying. So,
but in the same token, too, Michael, if you ever watched the movie Black Hawk Down?
Yes, I did. I know that. I was going to say that.
That is reality.
Yep.
And
it is.
If you think they're so anxious to go over to Africa, you're sadly mistaken. Because they sabotaged them people. They murdered them. They dragged those soldiers' bodies through the streets. That's what they do. So I don't know if it's got something to do with Africa or Putin, because Putin got some shit with him, too. It's a lot of stuff going on right now.
What disturbs me most about this all, y'all, is that it's not being talked about. Where people are thinking, they're giving people stuff to digest, but if it's got no weight to it, if it's got nothing that gives anybody any pause to say or to ask those next questions as journalists would normally do, why would you bother? You know, we already know the kind of shit that Fox is going to put out about this. They've already started talking about it. You know, and obviously blaming Obama, although he ain't got shit to do with it. At least it seems on the surface he has nothing to do with it. But it doesn't matter.
He really doesn't have anything to do
with it.
And
they're not going to have anything to put out about it. Exactly. They're not going to put anything relevant out, Cheryl, because they don't want to. And it again goes back to the girls being collateral damage here because, just like you said, stifling their education. They didn't go out and just get anybody. They could have taken women if it was about all that. They chose to take girls. So there's a sexual thing about this, too, that disturbs me greatly.
Yes, it is. And, you know, their beliefs over there, you know, with the AIDS and stuff, they infect a virgin. They think they're going to be cured. There's a lot of things that you would think, and then you come over here and act like you're civilized, that you're still living back in the ages that a woman's body is not. And the whole country of Africa should be held accountable. They should find those
I agree.
And not ask for help for everybody else going there to get slaughtered. They don't know that damn country, but they do. Where's the help coming from them? As you would say, I digress on this one here. Something ain't right. And I wouldn't be surprised if whoever was in charge of that village or whatever sold those girls into slavery, because that's what they do.
And we know that's a viable option is what they did. I'm disturbed to the fact that they took these girls who were essentially
trying to get an education.
And on top of that, they're going to be, or they were going to be, people who are going to be leaders in their community because they were getting an education. And
they were
going to
make a difference.
Yeah, this deliberate effort to stifle them from an educational standpoint, to control them and make sex slaves out of them, because they were talking about buying them as brides for as little as $12 U.S. in some cases. And, you know, again, because it is cyberspace, you can't count on the information being 100%, but the fact that they were able to put that information out there and the major news networks are deliberately ignoring it tells you the depth of where black people are really in trouble, because if we're depending on the Philadelphia Tribune and other black papers to give us information, our shit is up shit's creek already. I know from having worked there. These cats don't think nothing about the big picture. They don't think in terms of global. They're worried about, well, you know, do we get that advertising revenue for the Acme supermarket ad or whatever bullshit is in the Sunday pullout. They don't give a fuck about Africa. They don't give a fuck about the fact that this would affect people here as well. You know, if 243 or 234 black girls were abducted from Philadelphia, do you think folks would raise a stink about it?
You're damn right. They would raise a stink about it. You would have to give them some damn answers. And immediately, not scratch your damn head and think about it, or we don't have no clue whether these girls are bullshit.
That's exactly right.
They know.
I heard a cattle that had been rustled. Okay, they didn't just disappear. They weren't levitated. They weren't taken up in a space shuttle. So there got to be some, you know, and we're talking about Africa. We're not talking about an area where there's a lot of hard ground rock. You know, there's a track somewhere.
Yeah, and there has to be a track back to who may have been complicit in helping the girls get snatched, because they just didn't get jumped all of a sudden. Exactly. They didn't just get jumped. They knew somebody had to be working on the inside, put them in that situation for them to get captured.
It was set up for them to be taken when they were taken, at the time they were taken. It was someone on the inside that set it all up. What it also does, it discourages anybody else that's a girl that wants to get an education, because now they're afraid of going to school because they're afraid of being adopted.
So there's a lot of psychological game being pumped here, and this is real black-on-black crime. This is true shit here, and you don't have anybody speaking loudly enough on this side of the water to say, y'all know that shit ain't right. And even if what we're trying to do here might be something that would be more hindrance than help, the fact that no one is saying anything about it at all, and that it didn't pick up any momentum until we got on social media, is the bigger issue. Because now black people don't understand that your real news ain't coming off the TV screens or off CBR or CNBC or MSNBC or Fox or whatever alphabet soup crap is coming out at you. You know, that's the scariest problem of all, that folks are so hypnotized by this, they would rather watch American Idol worrying about who sings and vamps better than the other one than understanding what the hell is going on around your world beyond your city block. Now, as I say this, we get to the point where we are in our final thought mode and whatnot, and I saw Reggie just sneak in there and whatnot, as he always does. So, Reggie, throw something in the pot and give me a shameless plug and a final thought.
Well, I hope you hear me okay. I'm on the road and there's a storm down here.
Hey.
We had a
We had a situation with Georgia High School. Last year, former junior union coach Willie Coker took them from last to the state championship finals. Even though they lost, the young men really fought hard and understand what it talks about when it comes to teamwork and also doing things the right way. Well, mysteriously, the Richmond Times-Dispatch reared his ugly head and couldn't wait, and they're jealous to print a story saying that the Georgia High School has forfeited 25 games. Now, all of a sudden, calls were made to try to find out what was going on. Oh, we meant to tell you, it wasn't the policy of the JV. Well, the damage has already been done, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you put a story out there, then all of a sudden, when you're being called, as a matter of fact, you use the Internet to do it. Then when you ask about, well, what is this about? Oh, well, right now, meanwhile, they have L.C. Byrne, who coach over there, has won two state championships back-to-back. But here's the challenge to that. His players, all of a sudden, have a 1.2, 1.3, 1.7 grade point average. And here's the kicker. The head coach is the head guidance counselor. Now, talking about tipping ain't easy. But, yeah, once again, the parents call me, call Coach McPhee, and others saying, what can you do to get my son in school? We'll even go to an HBCU. Now, I'm really ticked now because you have underestimated and marginalized HBCUs. If anything, you should be supporting. But this is the
we even made it sound like they was doing them a favor by saying, yeah, we'll allow them to go to HBCU.
Yeah.
Wow.
NBA standout Johnny Newman has said, why don't you say I don't stop recycling coaches when coaches like me and others can get into these schools with credentials, saying that, hey, I play in the NBA, I'm a businessman, and guess what? I can get into some of the homes that you people won't let me in. But then again, as John Newman said, if the CIAA look at it as a business and not an event, then maybe we'll move forward. And on the sidebar, it's sad that the CIAA has decided not to have a men's coach of the year as far as football, and that came from the president of the different schools. So, and you're going to wonder why you're going to lose great coaches? Hey, Sports Talk every Saturday at www.dubsimradio.com from 12 to 1.
All right. That sounded like money there, Cowboy. Good looking out. Cheryl,
I'm trying.
I know it's been a while, so I'm glad that you were able to come back on and give us some enlightenment here. Give us a final thought and a shameless plug, please.
My final thought is that they know what happened to those poor girls, and I feel so bad for the young ladies that want to get an education, and this so-called Muslim religion and radicalism won't allow them, but the country, shame on you, because it shouldn't be allowed to happen. Children shouldn't be afraid in their own countries and their own villages that they can't go to school and learn to better their people. They're not just bettering themselves. These young ladies probably contribute and serve better their community. And I'm praying for this every day, that something happens, that they can come home. And my shameless plug is 2010 Vaughn Street, Little Scholars Academy. We educate your babies. We love them up, and we get them ready for kindergarten. And our phone number is 215-342-9500. And we also do summer camp.
There you go. Little Scholars Academy now offering a summer camp.
Yeah, beautiful.
2010 Ron Street in Philly. Professor, time for an update and a shameless plug, please.
Well, they see the first thing is the Lomberg unveiling of the Lomberg historical marker is next Friday. And followed by other events on campus. We're not have the book quite ready, but we're waiting on a sponsor for that. That's another story. But to the point that Reggie was making, I hope those young men go stay in the state of Virginia, because in North Carolina and state supported schools, you cannot get into athletics with that kind of a GPA that we just don't care anymore. I think Virginia is probably very close, because in most places now require 2+. So
yeah.
I don't know where this jerk of a guidance counselor/coach came from or why he's allowed to stay in either profession, because he's a discredit to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't address any further than that. But that's Reggie's state, his hometown, that kind of stuff. But I understand where he's coming from. The other thing is, we have books available to, that are, we're using to support the High School Heritage Center from North Carolina, South Carolina. The book is Black Diamonds. The information will be up, hopefully, it will be up next week, because my webmaster has decided to take a week's vacation, so he can stay disconnected for a week.
Right.
We're going to let him go until next week, and then we'll get everything back on track with that. In the other books that are ready for purchase, Black College Alumni American Role Model, Book 1 and Book 2 are available. And the second edition for the Shaw book's title is Shaw University, Shaw Bears, Shaw Bears, Decade of Champions Beyond is ready, as well as we have just started working on the second volume of Vehicle Profiled in Black. We're pre-selling it as a fundraiser for an organization called Community Factor, and there will be a second organization included shortly. We're working out some details with them, but a large portion of the income from these books will go towards Community Factor, as well as the other organization, which will be educational in nature. And one last point, I was asked about this morning on another radio show, and I was telling them that these books are set up as fundraisers. Each one of these books that are done on an individual institution will provide income for that institution. If you have anybody from Livingstone, we're just about finished with Livingstone College, and we can easily make over $1 million for Livingstone Athletics, as well as their academics, so that they can afford to recruit kids from their own churches, and we can make this money through their churches. So they can go on our website, www.blackheritagereview.com, and start making your purchases. We help keep the cost down so we have more money to give to the schools individually. That's www.blackheritage.com. Buy a book, get the story out, and raise money for your institutions.
Thank you, Professor. As always, www.blackheritagereview.com, home of the Black College Sports Encyclopedia, and the special edition HBCU books that will offer a grassroots effort to get the kids to stay at home, knowing that they'll get the proper nurturing, and that we will be ahead of the curve and having the talent understand that there's more things going on than what's between those white lines on that seal. As I say this, again, we're at the top of the hour. The Great Upper Cove with Gary Norris Gray is starting. We will be back on Sunday with our music therapy session and our salute to mom. Again, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, including Sonic Cheryl, Flex Cheryl, Mom Booker. You know, there's nothing like a mom. And as we do old school here, remember, you wear your carnations on Mother's Day, or you keep them in the house. Me, I have a white one that's going to be in the vase for my mother, because you wear white to recognize your mom has moved on. And you wear red if she's still alive. So I'm going to have some red ones in the jar for my girls and their moms, and the fact that they are moms, two of them themselves. So we can keep traditions alive here. As we say, we tell our own stories. That's one of our stories as well. And being from up north, I even know that. So having said that, my first book, Imitation Life, is available for purchase on Amazon.com. You can also have it downloaded via Kindle. And in another couple of weeks, we're going to have our big-ass barbecue family reunion. I know I'll see Cheryl there. She's going to break bread with my family. Hasn't ever happened. We're going to have that today. Friends, you know you're invited, but you know, by the time you get up, everything's going to be gone. So I'm sorry.
we have real barbecue down here, so.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, all right. Well, gotta take
we are.
Having said that, everybody, please go safe. Have a good weekend. We are looking to do everything we can to make sure that the girls come back home, but that we also take care home. And taking care home, you do that by telling your own stories. You do that by supporting those who tell the stories. And in doing so, you're supporting yourself. And isn't that what it's about? Recycling on the real tip. For Professor Fred, for Sonic Cheryl, for Gary Norris Gray, for Cowboy Reggie and all the chefs on assignment.